לאוסחות, וביונסן חסכם ובמועדיכם ובראשי חודשיכם, וזכתכם בחצוצרוס על עושיכם ועל זדחי שרמיכם, והיו לכם לזיכרון לפני אלוקיכם, אני השם אלוקיכם. That on festival days, Rosh Chodesh, other appointed times of the Jewish year, they blew in the Mikdash, the Chatzotzros, the Shofar, and that serves as a remembrance before God. Rashi here, based on tradition, indicates that some of the triplets that this particular Pasuk contains refer in part to the Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, the three units of Shofar that we sounded just a few days ago. But in the Pasuk immediately prior, the Torah says, when you will come to a war in your land, and of course the immediate reference is Eretz Yisrael. Unfortunately, we can include that in today's proceedings as well. Al-Hatzar Hatzarer Eschem, to give it a modern translation, against the terrorism, the terrorists that may strike you. Then too, it's appropriate to sound the shofar, to sound the chatzotzrot, to be remembered before God. Psadia Gaon and others interpret that when the shofar is sounded before God, God will save you from your enemies. Others interpret in a broader way that at a time of crisis, at a time of tragedy, at a time of attack, to commemorate an attack, we need to be remembered before God, we need to be in the presence of God, to receive the benefit of His Shekhinah, of His help. L'fnei Hashem very often connotes the Mikdash, where God's presence was most keenly felt. The Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed from that time on, Nitla Nevuah, prophecy was taken away from the prophets, and it was given to the Chachamim. The notion of Gilui Shekhinah, the notion of being close to the Divine Presence, resides with the Chachamim. Today, on this very important day, our students, in the days and weeks leading up to this event, expressed really a she'ifa, a strong desire, to hear words of chizuk, words of wisdom from our chacham, from our nasi, from our Rosh Yeshiva, from our representative of the chachamim of old, from Harav Dr. Nachum Lam. Dr. Lam has very graciously, as always, not surprisingly, acceded to the students' request. Indeed, he was the first one here, Zerizim Makdimim. He came early, earlier than he should have, in order to be here with us today. And it is a great honor and privilege to call upon Dr. Norman Lam, President of Yeshiva University, Rosh HaYeshiva, to address us.
You've asked me to speak about the importance of remembering. The great philosopher George Santayana once famously said that those who ignore history are doomed to relive it. So everyone agrees that it's important to remember. The question is, what do we remember? Whom do we remember? And how do we remember? So let me begin by putting this event in some kind of perspective. There were many catastrophes in history, both man-made and natural. To concentrate on the man-made, in my lifetime, though not your lifetime, there was the gulag of Stalin. Millions of people perished. The experiment of the communist regime in China. Millions of people perished. Khmer Rouge, World War II, Cambodia. One can give a whole list of catastrophes invented by human minds, depraved human minds, but human minds. And then, of course, was the Shoah, the Holocaust. If you want to understand the impact of the Holocaust on the Jewish people and thereafter to the world, remember that we lost one-third of our world population. We started at 18 million, we were back to 12 million after the Shoah. Put that now, make the mathematical calculation, a very simple one. What would have happened if the World Trade Center catastrophe had been expanded to be one-third of the American people? We would have lost over 82 million people. And nevertheless, despite all that, the impact of what happened exactly 1 year ago today was enormous. I think Sharon put her finger on it when she said that it exposed our vulnerability. We have been living, really, we Americans have been living in a fool's paradise for a long time, protected by two oceans which seem to us to be impassable and therefore for us permanent boundaries of our security and safety. And we learned to our dismay that we are vulnerable. America is no different qualitatively from every other group of human beings. And that is a very difficult lesson to learn. Let me now turn to the question of what do we remember? How do we remember? There's a great debate that is still raging as recently as this morning's newspapers, and it has been raging for the past year here in New York City. How and what do we remember about the tragic events of September 11, 2001? And there are two sides of the story. One of them is that the place should be left as it is, destitute, except for a museum or a monument, an everlasting tribute to the cruelty that struck us, and an everlasting tribute to the close to 3,000 people who were killed, the 300 who are still alive, wounded for life, and the thousands upon thousands of relatives and friends who will never forget this day and who were wounded psychologically and emotionally. On the other side, there's another point of view, just the opposite, and saying, good, it's important to remember the tragedy, but we Americans are optimistic, and we have to go ahead and forge our own future and not allow ourselves to be dragged down by this one terrorist strike. And we have to rebuild. If this was the financial capital of the world, it must again become the financial capital of the world to show that we're going to not only survive, but we are going to thrive, and we will not allow the terrorists to determine our future. Now, which one ought we to emphasize? The remembering of the tragedy or the overcoming of the tragedy? Historically, we Jews have experienced that. The most traumatic event in Jewish history until the Shoah was the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, of the temple, in the year 70. Destruction left our people devastated. Our whole way of life had changed, because our whole religious and spiritual communal life was built upon the service in Jerusalem and Yerushalayim. And after that, we were at a loss. Of course, we filled in, but it was a wrenching experience historically. And the question was, how do we remember the destruction of the temple? And they developed a group called the Avelei Tzion, the Mourners of Zion. The Avelei Tzion were people who determined that they would never forget what happened, that they would always mourn it, and therefore never again would their mouths taste meat or wine. Never again would they laugh, whole laughter, nothing more than a smile. They wanted to live a life of a perpetual Shiva, or a perpetual 9 days, without any relief. And many of them did. But the Talmud rejected that for the simple reason, as Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Hananya said, that in gozerin gezeirah letzibur, elem keinrova tzibur yachol labodo. You do not decree a law, a form of practice, a norm for the community, unless most of the community can abide by it. And most people cannot live in perpetual avelut, in perpetual mourning. And therefore, they banned it, or they did not encourage it. Nevertheless, it declined for a while. It came up again in the Middle Ages. In various periods of Jewish history, the Avelei Tzion came up. And even to this day, we occasionally mention in our prayers, especially at Tisha B'Av, Nachem Hashem Alekeinu, Avelei Tzion v'Avelei Yerushalayim. We mention them because there was something to what they said. Even if it did not become halacha, even if it wasn't put into a normative framework, it was something precious. And so we remember them. So the question is, what do we do? Rabbi Hananya and Rabbi Yeshua, they advocated moderation. But what happens in halakha? Is there any way of determining what we ought to do in Jewish law, in Jewish tradition? And the answer is yes. And the Talmud had two minds in its reaction to catastrophe. Those two themes are called Zecher l'Churban, in memory of the Churban, of the destruction, and the other one is Zecher l'Mikdash, in memory of the temple itself. Zecher l'Churban emphasized the pessimistic, the negative thing, We remember the destruction. We never forget. We owe it to the people who were destroyed. We owe it to the temple that was destroyed. We owe it to the people of Israel who had to suffer through this catastrophe, this cataclysm. And the other one was Zecher HaMikdash. We will never forget the beauty of the temple. We will never forget the glory, the sanctity, the holiness of the temple, the service that took place, how it united our people. And therefore, our hope that it will be reestablished, rebuilt, and resurrected. How do these two themes, these two opposite themes, play out in the halacha? Simple. Zecher l'Churban we have to this day. It means, for instance, that there's a halacha that most of us don't follow, yet some people do, that every home has to have a slab of 3 by 3 feet, which is unpainted, in the main room. So that, as beautiful as the home is, there's always a note of remembering the Churban. Or at a wedding, you break a glass. Forget all the fancy explanations. The real simple explanation is Zecher l'Churban. It's a memory of the destruction. In some cases, they also put ashes on the head of the chosam to remember the destruction of the temple. So Zecher l'Churban does play itself out in many aspects of Jewish life. On the other hand, you have Zecher l'Mikdash, memory of the Beit HaMikdash itself. For instance, we're going in a week or two to come to the holiday of Sukkot. Well, what is the mitzvah of Sukkot? Not only the Sukkah, but also the Arba Minim, the Lulav. The halacha is that in the Beit HaMikdash, the Lulav was waved all seven days, and in Gvulin, outside the Beit HaMikdash, it was only one day. That was the halacha before the temple was destroyed. After the destruction of the temple, our Chazal legislated that every place, even Bigvulin, we should do it 7 days, even though it's required only once min HaTorah. Why 7 days? Zecher l'Mikdash, in memory of the Beis HaMikdash, to give us that injection of optimism. On the Pesach later, the Korach, Zecher l'Mikdash k'Hillel. We follow Hillel who was Korach, Matzah, Moroh, Pesach, v'Ochlam Yachad. Why? Because we remember the Beis HaMikdash on this day. We count the Omer. The Omer was brought when the temple was in its own glory, its own beauty. Now, min HaTorah, according to Moshe Shonim, we do not have the mitzvah of Omer. Nevertheless, we do say Sfiras Omer, Zecher l'Mikdash. Interestingly, there's even one opinion of the Baal Amor that although the counting of the Omer is Zecher l'Mikdash, the positive, nevertheless, we don't make a Shechianu because it is Zecher l'Churban as well. So you have these two things struggling with each other. On the one hand, we remember the negative, the destruction. On the other hand, we recall the beauty, the glory, and therefore our hope, unrepressed, eternal hope, to be able to overcome the destruction and attain the glory once again. So the arguments, both Talmudic and contemporary, are reflections, really, of a deeper ambivalence in the universal human psyche, the universal human mind and heart, concerning catastrophes, whether natural or man-made. And the result is paradoxical reactions. On the one hand, deep grief, mourning, bordering on despair, a sense of defeat. On the other hand, defiance, struggle, healing, hope, and a striving to overcome and reattain the glory that once was. So, you have the same kind of theme when a relative passes away, or a loved one passes away. What do Jews do on occasion of this sort? One sits Shiva, 7 days of Avelut, of mourning. So the law requires us to mourn. That's Zecher l'Churban. Nevertheless, everyone else is required to come and visit the mourner, Nichum Avelim, and what do we do when we visit the mourner? We try to bring him or her back into normal life. We do Zecher l'Mikdash. We appeal to the mourner to remember the good that once was, the beauty, the love, the happiness that they attained, and therefore bring them back into a state of so-called normalcy where they can continue living later on. Again, the two things are like Siamese twins, related to each other like twin stars, revolving around each other, but both things are there. Or take the Kaddish. You know, the Kaddish is the classical prayer to be recited in the case of someone who's lost a relative, one of seven relatives. Now, one of the problems that that occurs with Kaddish. What is the problem of Kaddish? Anyone? If you read the text, it has nothing to do with death. Here is the classic expression of mourning. It hasn't got a single word to do with death. We ask that God's great name be magnified, Yisgadal, and he be sanctified, Yisgadal Shemeid Abba. Nothing to do with death. In the world which he created, accept our prayers, not a word. What does the Kaddish really mean? I'd like to share with you what Shai Agnon, the great Israeli writer and the only one who ever was a novelist, the only one Nobelist, won the Nobel Prize. Agnon wrote what is called a Reshus LeKaddish, a prayer before the Kaddish. The essence of the prayer is this. I've always regarded it as a marvelous insight. He said, a human king, a human president, a human leader, involved in a war, a general, will throw his troops into battle. And he doesn't consider each individual person. He can. It would be criminal for him to do so because he has the responsibility for a whole army and a whole country. What does he do? He treats them like cannon fodder. 10,000 troops here, 20 troops there, 100,000 troops going in afterwards. He treats them in a global point of view. Not so Melech Malchei HaMelechim, not God who is the King of Kings. For him, every human being is a precious soldier in the army. Every human being, regardless of race, religion, nationality, and anything else, is a child of God, a soldier of God, beloved of God. If that person dies, then God's name is diminished, and God's Kedusha, his sanctity, is diminished. So when someone dies, we turn to our Kaddish Baruch Hu, and we say, God, we are here to console you. We are Menachem Ovel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You lost something of your name, of the greatness of your name. You lost something of your holiness. So we pray, Yisgadal V'Yisgadash Meirabah. May your great name be magnified, not instead of diminished, and may be sanctified instead of desecrated. So the Kaddish again has the theme on the one hand of death requiring consolation and consolation itself with a hope for a future and the hope for Chayei Olam. Most remarkable, there are several forms of Kaddish. There's Kaddish Le'ela, Kaddish Deskalel, Kaddish Derabanan. There is also Kaddish De'ischadata, which is the most beautiful when you read the translation. Also, for most people who didn't do it, generally they stumble over the words, over the Aramaic words. It's a Kaddish, and we ask God that his name be magnified and consecrated and reconsecrated in a world which he is about to which he will be rebuilding, in which Yerushalayim will be rebuilt, in which the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt, in which the Geula will come to Israel and to the world. And when is this Kaddish, this Kaddish recited? Two occasions. One of them at an open grave, just before the interment, before the burial. And the other, at the joy and the party you make of a Siyum Masechet. When you finish a Masechet, a Dalyam of the Talmud, and you joyously recite the same Kaddish. It's how remarkable that is. The same prayer recited at an open grave of someone being lowered to his eternal rest, and the same one at the joy of finishing a Masechet. Because there's Zechel HaChurban and Zechel HaMikdash. And both themes, again, go hand in hand. And perhaps the very best symbol of this duality of Zechel HaKorban and Zechel HaMikdash you find in the shofar, which we just heard. On the shofar, there are three kinds of sounds. I'm sure you all know this. You've studied it before Rosh Hashanah. You have the tkiah, the long, single long blast, shvarim, three intermediate sounds, tsua, the staccato, nine shorts, sobs, and then the tkiah again. Shvarim and tsua symbolize weeping and crying. It's lamentation. It's the three intermediate sounds of the crying and then the sort of sobbing sound of staccato. What does the tkiah represent? Tkiah is a sound of simcha, of joy. So you have to take the weeping and the sobbing and surround it by expressions of joy. So in one blast of the shofar, you have the combination of zechel v'churban, the shvarim tua, zechel v'mikdash, the tekiah. As if to say, if you want to lead a good life, a proper life, a worthy life, a life of remembering what's right, then you've got to remember what's wrong, but surround it with remembering what is right, that we can overcome the defeat. We want to survive the despair and achieve hope and rebuilding and bringing back the glory, the happiness, the so-called normalcy that once was. I read this morning in the New York Times that Mayor Bloomberg, the mayor of this great city, said something similar. He said, "We'll mourn in the morning, and in the evening we'll rededicate ourselves to rebuild." I almost completely agree with him. Both themes, yes, but not really that separate of having one period for mourning and then forgetting the mourning and going on to the rebuilding. With us, it must be simultaneous. Zecher l'Churban and Zecher l'Mikdash. We can afford to dispense with neither. As we mourn those who did not survive the Twin Tower bombing, as we mourn those who were injured and who lost those precious relatives, we keep both things in mind. We realize that we Americans are a very proud people. The reason they struck the World Trade Center is because that is a symbol of capitalism, of democracy, of American entrepreneurship, of American initiative. They wanted to destroy that. Well, we are a proud people, and we are optimistic people. But if we forget the Zecher l'Churban, then we are an unrealistic people. America has learned something. We've learned that we are vulnerable, that after all is settled and done, we share the common lot of humanity, discover that life is sometimes risky, life is frangible, life is fragmented, and not always do we achieve our ends, and we have to always consider the fact that lurking behind us, maybe above us, and certainly below us, are the threats of death and destruction. Without that knowledge, we march into life unarmed and unprepared. And on the other hand, we never must allow ourselves to become a depressed people, because recognizing the Zecher l'Churban, we rededicate ourselves to Zecher l'Mikdash. So the memory must be preserved, but the memory of the destruction must not dominate us for all the future. Indeed, the Zecher l'Churban, as we go on, must be transformed dialectically into its opposite, the Zecher l'Mikdash. And the Zecher l'Mikdash can never afford to express itself without always having at its side the Zecher l'Churban. That is the way of maturity. That is the way Chazal understood the reaction to the Beis HaMikdash and how we understand the reaction to any and all catastrophes. Let's hope that the victims will be remembered not only by their immediate families, by all of us, and that together they and us will rededicate ourselves as Americans and as Jews to a greater, safer, more secure, a far more realistic future.